But I firmly believe that 5 years from now or less, companies even as big as Macy's and GE will finally catch on to the philosophy, which I think everybody needs to own, which is we need to present to the world through social media what we like and what we want to see as individuals. The problem I see is with companies, they present to the world what they think the public want to see.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I'm delighted that I'm joined today by Peter Lorimer. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So, originally from the UK, Peter has had tremendous success as a record producer before he came to the US, working alongside some of the biggest recording artists of the 80s and 90s. You had over 30 number ones in the Billboard Club charts and another 25 around the world.
Yep.
And it was your love of working with artists, your creativity, and a succession of really successful personal real estate deals that led you into the world of real estate, which is
correct
now. So you joined Keller Williams Realty in 2005. I love this story. You became Rookie Agent of the Year. You then had three back-to-back years of being the number one agent in the Keller Williams brokerage. And in 2009, you became the number one top producing Keller Williams agent for the entire LA region, which is Beverly Hills, Malibu, Bel Air. Now, I understand that that was all part of your plan.
Yes.
And we'll come back to that in a minute.
Yes, indeed.
And in 2010, you decided to take on these real estate giants and launch your own firm, which is PLG Estates, right in the heart of Beverly Hills, really putting, you know, two fingers up to the establishment.
Which is what I like to do.
Which is it. So you're a former hit record producer turned real estate mogul. Your firm, PLG Estates, not only has taken on the big boys and is winning, but you've consistently been one of the top real estate producing agents in Beverly Hills for over 10 years.
Right.
So what's the secret?
Wow, that sounds kind of, you know, it's funny. I'm someone that I'm always obsessed with looking forward. But it's funny when you sit down and kind of round up what the past decade has done. I suppose there is quite a lot in there, really. It's kind of meaty.
It is. And I think that is the thing, because as an entrepreneur, you're always driving forwards. It's always, you know, get up and, you know, what am I going to do today? But there has to be some strategy behind this. So what do you think? And I think there's a phrase that I love, which I've heard you use before many times, is staying ahead of the vanilla cloud.
Yes. I'm going to have that on a t-shirt one day.
So you're trying to build something, which is, it's so easy to have a me too product in a real estate brokerage. So how do you do that? How did you build something that is not me too? How do you stay ahead of the vanilla cloud?
It's very interesting, Matthew, because really what I'm doing in real estate is what I did in music, right? The music business was a wonderful apprenticeship for life. Because the music business back in the, I didn't do too many records in the 80s, by the way, 81, 89, Bronski Beat. That's how far I go back. But the music business, because it's so crushingly difficult to be successful in it and competitive, was a wonderful apprenticeship for corporate America.
Yeah.
And the skill set that I had to hone very quickly as a record producer and a remixer and songwriter was I had to be able to successfully predict where my music was dance music, so it was dance floors. I had to predict where club music was going to be in 6, 12, and 18 months.
Yeah.
And after doing that for over a decade and a half, maybe I rearranged the DNA in my head, but I had a very, very keen sense of the street and the pulse of what's going to change in music and fashion and all of these various arenas. So when I joined the corporate world, it felt very much like the entire industry was the reverse of the music business, and everybody was looking back. They were looking at past history of numbers and, you know, that helped them chart a course. And it seemed to me that nobody was really leaning into instinct in my arena.
No, I was going to say, but it takes a real leap of faith to actually feel that. So you have that feeling, you have that is, you know, is there something, is there an inner voice that you have that sort of drives you?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. You know, that's a great question. And the answer is, I guess, yes, I do. This stems back to when I was a kid in Leeds. I grew up in Leeds. And my father, God bless him, God rest his soul, was a teacher, right? He was a lecturer at Bradford Polytechnic for years and years and years. Lived a very safe life. And I got into music really young. I was a classical trombonist. I did really well at that. I was sent to the Royal College as an exceptional student at 12. And I could see a path that was very clear for me in classical music. But then I discovered dance music. And I literally dropped out of high school, moved to London to go find a recording studio to work in. And this is kind of the fingerprint of my career, which is I get 70% of the way there by logic, and then the last 30 is sheer instinct.
But it's instinct driven by previous experience and this. And I've heard you use this expression, the debating society. So I'd love to hear more about. So presumably the instinct, it's not clear driven. You must have some sort of, you know, real discussions internally about how, you know, how this is going to work.
Yes, it's well, let's talk about the Vanilla Cloud. And I gracefully breezed over that point. The Vanilla Cloud to me is, I find in real estate specifically, that most, if not all, companies tend to look back. Whereas what I have made a cornerstone of PLG about, and my former career before that as an agent, was predicting what's next. And so that keeps us as a company on the forefront of not just what geographically is next and technologically what's next, but what sociologically is next.
Absolutely.
Which I think is kind of the largest piece and the most undiscovered piece by most companies, to kind of get a pulse of the sociology of a city, because that will help me predict what's going to come.
But where does that come from? So where does this, where does that information come from? How do you, is it from the people that you employ, or is it from other sources? Or
I mean, it's really from everything. It's from looking at what is being posted on social media. It's looking at graphics that are used. It's looking at TV shows that are failing and then TV shows that are hits. It's looking at records that once would have been hits that are no longer hits. And it's just following that trail of breadcrumbs of where society is heading and going, well, it feels like it's going this way, and then running 100 steps forward and being there for when everybody arrives.
Absolutely. And I've heard you say that technology is not the answer. So, you know, social media is not about technology. And I'd love to hear your views on social media, because your YouTube channel, you have nearly 300 items on YouTube. You're a regular producer of great content, you know, short content, long content. You have Magic Minutes, PLG Shorts, Backstage Pass. You know, this is really engaging content. And how critical do you think it is, not just for real estate businesses, but for any business, to actually engage with social media and to effectively wake up and smell the coffee?
So this is this really for me is the crux of commerce today. You and I both remember in the 90s when we were both in different industries. If I decided to start a record label in 1994, it would be incredibly difficult to be successful, because all the marketing had to be done through buying ads in papers.
Absolutely.
And then along came the internet and Facebook, which is something that was just a bell that rang so loud to me, that allowed us as a company to shuffle in amongst all the big boys of Beverly Hills. And I remember sitting down with my wife, Cindy, and making a conscious decision. I said, there's a guy that I follow by the name of Gary Vaynerchuk, I like very much. Yeah. And he talks about finding the white space in a saturated market. So if we had opened PLG and said to all the agents, you need to postcard these areas and you need to go, you know, door knocking and you need to make 50 calls, all we're doing is we're repeating what everyone else is doing. So a phrase that I like to use is when everybody's running in one direction, I like to run completely in the opposite direction.
Which is great. And what is that other quote? That hell is the definition of hell is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome.
Right. Definition of insanity.
Yes, that's right. Same. Yeah, well, yes.
Same thing. The road to hell is paved with good intentions is the other one. So I figured nobody was doing this. Nobody was doing video marketing and nobody was doing kind of raw, vulnerable, exposing oneself to criticism. And I think the main fear is because real estate is much more closely related to banking and financial institutions that have always been very conservative. Whereas I come from the music business, which is you can go on stage, throw up on yourself, and you'll sell another $500,000 records.
Kudos. Yes, exactly.
So I was like, okay, let's blend these two worlds. It makes sense in my mind. Will it make sense in the marketplace? And it has in spades. There is a whole niche of people that want to buy and sell with people who are much more kind of raw and vulnerable and open and feel like they're part of the same tribe, rather than having somebody in a suit and tie, which there's nothing wrong with.
Yeah.
Having someone with a suit and tie where there is that more traditional distance, that veneer between servicor and servicee.
I completely agree, but I'd like to speak a bit more or talk a bit more about fear. So it sounds to me building a business is as if it's water off a duck's back. Now, I know that's not the case. And I know that there are, for every day of joy, there are, you know, weeks of torment and pain and sleepless nights. But how do you find the courage to make these decisions, to build a business, to take on the risk of, I mean, what is your office in Beverly Hills? 7,000 square feet, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, with the 80 plus agents that you,
yes,
you know, so that's a big responsibility. So, you know, and I think a lot of problems that entrepreneurs have is the fear of doing something because there are so many unknowns. You know, how do you overcome that?
This is a great question, and it's a question that I can give you an answer in an evolution, and I'll try and do it quickly. When we first started PLG, I went from being an agent to a business owner, and I thought the transition would be seamless, and it would feel the same. Well, it didn't, and I had that, oh, shit.
Yes.
Oh, hang on a second. And then I'm like, well, I thought because nobody trained me and I didn't have any mentor. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do what business owners do. And I'm going to start looking at what we're spending on toilet paper and coffee and pens and paper.
Yes.
And I was miserable, absolutely miserable. And my wife, bless her heart, who's been my partner and is way more than 50% of the success that we have.
Yes.
She just said, don't worry about the money. Just go to your strengths, which is navigating where the company goes.
Yeah.
So I did that and it was great. And that took a massive amount of pressure off of me. And my COO, who is Cindy, kind of took care of everything else. And she said to me, if the needle goes too far the other way, I'll let you know. So every day I wake up, I'm like, okay, well, she hasn't said anything. So the needle must be going in the right direction. And I pay absolutely no mind to profit and loss.
Yeah.
To me, it's irrelevant.
So that is really about finding partners or team members that you really trust.
Yes.
And that's, I think, a critical part is finding someone that you can work with, because the burden is big enough as an entrepreneur. And if there's some way, so would your advice be to someone who's starting out to try and partner with someone or to really go it alone?
I think the important thing as an entrepreneur is to know your strengths and weaknesses. And I do want to tackle the fear thing as well, because that did come into the building of PLG to the point of where it was very pressurized. And I'll touch on that in a second. The phrase that I like to use is every Kirk needs their Spock, right? They both can't stand each other at times.
Yes.
And then they both love each other at times, but both of them recognize that they are going to be far more successful in the universe with each other than alone.
Fascinating.
Very good. And so Cindy has been my Spock.
Yes.
And she has taken care of kind of the nuts and bolts of running the company. Yeah. However, she never has questioned if I have some ludicrous idea or scheme or marketing event.
Yes.
She never questions it. And she might say, we can't afford to do that.
Yes.
But she will never say, I don't really see the point or I don't get it. It's like, I'm the hunter.
Yeah.
She's the skinner.
Which is great. And I think you need that because you need to know in the background that the business is running itself. And as the de facto finance director, I suppose she has the equivalent of the Vulcan death grip anyway.
She does.
So, but that's...
In more ways than one.
But talking about fear, this fear of, this the great fear of imposter, of, you know, the imposter syndrome. And I think... When we started this chat at the beginning, you were saying that it's funny when someone talks about what you've achieved, you have this sort of, oh yeah, actually this brings back good memories. But you know, are there moments even now where you think, where is this business going? How am I going to maintain this edge? Do you still have that every day?
No. I came to a crossroads last year. So we had one office for many, many years, and then we decided to expand. We expanded first quarter 2016, which just so happened that the market contracted in that quarter. And I had then started the build out on a new office as the market began to contract. I'd also made some investments on real estate towards the end of 2015 that had kind of sucked away quite a lot of equity.
Yeah.
And so I was caught in the moment of like, oh shit, you know, wow, this overhead. Because the build out was six figures and, you know, I'm like, I've got no agents over there. And fear came in.
Yes.
And my wife and partner, she kind of sensed it on me and she kind of gave me an ultimatum because I was making her life a living hell.
Yeah.
And she said, either you are in faith or you are in fear. But if you are going to remain in fear, this is going to really impact our relationship. Now, this is something that I've always lived my life by, which is I've always taken leaps of faith.
Yes.
But I was at this crossroads last, right about a year ago, where I consciously had to make the decision to not just have eight fingers off of the steering wheel, but 10.
Yeah.
And I became comfortable with the notion, and this is not lip service, I believe this to my very core, that if I am meant to drive a bus in Long Beach, I'm meant to drive a bus in Long Beach. And there really isn't much I can do to change that. If that is my destiny, it's my destiny.
Yeah.
And so what that has allowed me to do is my wife's a Buddhist. She's Vietnamese.
Yep.
And she was a boat person. So there's a lot of, she inspires me a great deal. I'm talking about her an awful lot, actually.
Yes.
And she has instilled in me this faith that everything will work out the way it's meant to work out. And it's our duty to work as hard and as honestly and as in a way that we share our knowledge every single day that we are presented. Yeah. And then the results are out of our hands.
Yes.
So as an entrepreneur, what does that mean to me? It means that I am going to bust a gut working as hard as I can to find information and techniques that to help my guys utilize them to capture more business. Do I have a line in the sand that says, I need to hit X percentage of profit by third quarter? No, I don't.
But does this give you the freedom then, which is what everybody wants, to do what you love, which is, I guess, creativity somehow? Is there a translation from being a music producer to doing what you're doing now? What are the elements that hop over from those two businesses?
That's a great question. So, once I had removed myself from being results orientated, Now, not completely and utterly, because I have ambition and I have goals.
Yeah.
But if I don't obtain that goal, I am perfectly comfortable with it, because okay. I believe it's leading me to somewhere else. And sure. what that enables me to do is the time that I devote to my agents and the skills that I try and hone and pass on comes without the toxic expectations of numbers.
Yeah.
And it makes us as a company have this, a camaraderie, very much like a record label or a theater troupe, or, you know, there isn't that corporate structure. It's much more kind of touchy-feely kind of, we're all in this together.
Yes, but there has to be a solid commercial driver underneath that.
Of course.
So, but that, I think what you're saying is that everyone knows that that's the given, so you can concentrate on more correct. Effective. And
correct.
And I think that leads on to your approach to social media as well, because, I mean, I'm very keen to hear about your approach. I heard you speak at a couple of conferences where you were very clear about your view on social media in terms of how it needs to be genuine and clear and it can't be staged. And that's, do you believe that's the case?
I think, now I could be a lunatic here. It's like the emperor's new clothes. But I firmly believe that 5 years from now or less, companies, even as big as Macy's and GE, will finally catch on to the philosophy, which I think everybody needs to own, which is we need to present to the world through social media what we like and what we want to see as individuals. The problem I see is with companies, they present to the world what they think the public want to see.
Yes.
So it becomes homogenized and watered down.
Which is what you were saying earlier about the real estate companies always looking backwards.
Yes.
So in other words, you're caught in this feedback loop, which means that you're never able to progress. So you think that's the way, you think social media is going to grow and become and change and morph?
I think it already is. I think it already is. And there are several companies such as Nike and a lot of the more progressive companies that are really speaking to that authentic, in their case, street culture. Whereas I see real estate, insurance, financial companies, Morgan Stanley, they're in the dark ages with this stuff, which, to be honest, I'm fine with that.
Yes.
Because if I was a record label, there'd be lots of record labels like us.
Yes.
But I'm a real estate company, and I doubt there are half a dozen in the US like us.
No, and I think that it's building something that unique is fan, you know, it is incredible. My question really is, now, what excites you most right now? What are you most driven by at this moment?
It's a great question. They're all great questions, Matthew.
Sorry, it's entirely accidental, sorry.
So what, I guess I finally fall into the category of entrepreneur, okay? I'm finally becoming comfortable with that. For me, an entrepreneur is Richard Branson or Steve Jobs. And you know, I'm just a peon compared to those guys. But, you know, I guess, all right, I will accept a very much lower ranking of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And I think one of the drive, I had lunch, and I can't mention his name, but I had lunch with one of the biggest real estate company CEOs in the United States last week. He summoned me to a lunch in Beverly Hills. And I was, usual me, kind of balls to the wall. And I think the definition for me for an entrepreneur is an entrepreneur wants to make sure that they put their heart and soul out to the world.
Yeah.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Right? They want to just make sure that their product or their idea or whatever it is that they're selling is theirs and perfectly done and put out into the world. Whether it's successful, I believe that comes second.
Yes. So it's like art. You create art for the sake of art, not for the sake of money.
Correct. And I have created PLG, and now the company has evolved itself because I was going to stick a freaking gun in my mouth if I had to walk in another corporate office. So I'm like, you know what? Fuck this. Let's just do this our way.
No, you're right. And I think my definition of an entrepreneur is actually, you know, unemployable. So it's, you cannot work for someone else. I don't know. There are 101 reasons why, but it's that fear, I think, of having someone else saying, Peter, do you have that report I asked you for?
Oh, yeah. God, no way.
That scares me, honestly. I would prefer to be poor and, yes, and free rather than... So what excites you? So now, is it where PLG is going?
Yes, it is. So what excites me is, as the company has evolved, my team has allowed me to go... I firmly believe that this social media kind of campaign that we're doing, which is genuine and authentic.
It is, yeah.
I feel that other industries, companies, whatever, will eventually kind of begin to smell the coffee, as you say, and catch up. So I am double, triple, quadrupling down,
yeah,
on the social media video aspect of who PLG is. Case in point is this. Before, I've only been doing video, not even 2 years, about 18 months at this point.
Yeah.
In 18 months, our company has tripled.
Yes.
In size.
And that is directly related. There's no...
I don't believe that. I mean, it can't be a coincidence.
No, it is a direct correlation.
It's a direct correlation, and it's something that I enjoy. I can't outspend Coldwell Banker.
Yes.
I can't outspend Prudential. I can't outspend, you know, Century 21. But I can run freaking circles around them in this world.
Absolutely, and I can feel the excitement here. I can feel that it is catching that. Come back to my first point: taking on the big boys and winning. You mentioned Branson. I remember the things that he used to stand by was, you know, first class service at a business class price, taking on the big boys and winning. That whole concept of, it's just because they're big doesn't mean, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to just finish on the fear thing. So fear was a part of it, but I made a decision to completely smash it out of my life. So I now live a fearless existence.
How?
I don't allow the debating society in.
So the voices, they've been banned, shut down.
There's always one voice. There's always one voice that speaks first and quietest. That is the voice I must follow. I believe that's instinct, whatever, higher power, yes, divine intervention, who knows? And then it's followed by a whole pub full of disenchanted negative shouting.
Yes.
So if I just put the blinkers on,
yeah,
and listen at the first guy and then do this, it allows me to step forward fearlessly. And I don't say that to sound like a warrior, but fear is so toxic, yeah, when you, as any kind of navigator,
yes,
that, well, I refuse to be directed by it at all.
And fear is normally just lack of knowledge or lack of information, if you boil it down. Is you're afraid of something because you don't know. The moment you know, the fear disappears.
Or I think fear is very closely linked with ego. It's what people think, what you think people think of you.
Yes.
And I couldn't give a toss.
And that's the purity. That's the thing that allows you to be creative and build a business and drive forward. And I can just tell that this is chapter one. You know, yes. Do you have that feeling that it's, you know, we're just getting started here?
I do. I finally. It's really incredible. It's like you're an overnight success that's been at it for 7 years with PLG, but I feel the momentum.
Yes.
And I feel that we're on the lips of certainly the Los Angeles community as they're, oh, those are the cool kids in school. And I'm getting asked to speak more and more. I'm speaking in Chicago. I'm speaking in San Francisco. I'm speaking with you, which, yes, I'm very grateful for.
Come on.
And I am. And it's, I mean, shit, this is every kid's dream, right? You wake up and you fill your day with exactly what you want to do.
Yes. Yes. But then there's the other voice that you get going, something's going to go wrong. It can't be this good. You know, it's such a, it's,
I think that's, they call that being British.
Yes, I think so, yes. I think you're right, yeah. Yes, you know, I don't deserve this success. You know, what am I doing being successful? You know, it's not fair on the others.
But how dare I?
Peter, I can't thank you enough. It's been fantastic speaking to you. How do people get hold of you? How do people find out more about you?
Okay, so if you want, anybody can reach out to me. I'm very open. Philosophy on life and business and everything is to give away what I have. Not you can't come and take my telly, but any knowledge I possess, I will share with anyone who wants it. Best way to find me is just go to @PLG Estates on all the platforms. And then my number is 310-666-PETE. If you want to get hold of me,
which is fabulous. And also I want people to check out your YouTube channel, because there's some brilliant videos there. I mean, really funny, sure. And I can tell you, I have such envy on the music that you mix on them as well. Yeah. So that's, they're fantastic. Yeah,
my old DJ chops.
But it's brilliant. But Peter, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been listening to Hooked on Startups. See you next week.
Thank you very much.